So today, we're going to begin, you know, we just finished the book of Hebrews. Today, we're going to start a new book, and we're going to go through the book of Daniel over the next number of weeks. And starting today with chapter 1. The book of Daniel is written by Daniel, obviously. And let me give you just a little bit of background so you kind of understand a little bit about the book. Daniel was written at a time when Judah, which is like the northern tribes of Israel, was taken captive by Babylon. So the people you're going to hear about in the story were actually living in a strange country. They were removed by King Nebuchadnezzar into a place called Babylon, which wasn't really a good place to be. And Daniel, who's the writer of the book, he was, they estimate, he was in his mid to late teens, maybe anywhere from 15 to maybe 20 years old at the time. So put that in context, you know, we're talking about teenagers being taken away into a strange country, and how do they navigate through all that? Daniel lived there in Babylon for many years. They estimate that he was about 80 years old when he was thrown into the lion's den. You remember that story, Daniel in the lion's den. So if he was taken away as a late teenager, now he's 80 years old. That's a long time to be in a foreign country. And it was not a country that was pursuing God. Daniel lived through four successive kings, four different kings. So think about like four different administrations he lived through. And the amazing thing about it is, because of his testimony and his faithfulness to God, he strongly influenced every one of these kingdoms. So you think about, wow, here's these young kids being brought into a foreign place, and they were just, in a sense, overwhelmed. I'll share that with you today, how they had the potential of being overwhelmed by the Babylonian culture, and yet they remained faithful to God. They were committed to their covenant with the Lord, and it made all the difference. Jesus called him a prophet in Matthew 24. He called him a prophet, and so the book of Daniel was listed as one of the prophecy books in the Bible. Many say that he was probably made a eunuch when he was brought into that kingdom, because he was under who was the guy who was called the chief of eunuchs. And I don't want to go into any detail about that, but I think you got an idea what's going on. So think of it, this young man in the prime of his life, taken into a strange country, removed from everything familiar, taken into a place that was really ungodly, and made a eunuch, along with, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And now they're having to maintain their spiritual fervor in the midst of this culture. It seems like it would speak a lot to us in our world today, doesn't it? That we're living in something similar, where there's a culture that's here that seems to be overbearing toward Christianity and following Jesus. It's important for us to be faithful to the Lord in the midst of our day. So I think it's going to be a really good book to look at. In the Bible, there are what's called genres. If you're like an English student, you know a genre is a type of writing, like a history is a genre. History book or a law book or a letter is a genre. So this is considered prophetic in the sense that when Daniel was speaking some of these things, they were future-looking. We'll see some of that in the days to come. There were some future-looking prophecy. So they're looking down through the corridor of time and seeing what is God going to do. But, you know, now it's history. We can look back on it and say, oh, these are things that happened. So it was prophetic at that day, but today it's kind of like history. There's some things that Daniel spoke about that actually have happened. And so we'll see that. It's also considered a book called apocalyptic. What's that mean? Well, you're gonna read about strange looking animals with many horns and, you know, wings and all, just kind of, you're gonna read that and say, what in the world is this talking about? So it's sort of like the book of Revelation in that sense, that a lot of times you're using visual pictures that give you an idea of something in a spiritual realm. So when we read about these things, you're not going to be in the earth seeing flying animals with 10 horns on them. It's a representative picture of something that will happen in the world, but it's not those things in particular. So when you read it, keep that in mind, because then you're going to have nightmares wondering, is a 10-horned animal knocking on my window tonight? Or looking under your bed, you know? And as I read through the book of Daniel, I see two really big ideas that are there. And it's really what I'm going to focus on. Ted's going to share as well as we go through the series. But my focus is going to be on two things. One is that the Lord is the ruler of all nations. The Lord is the ruler of all nations. That will come out so clearly in this book. And the second thing is that you can maintain faithfulness in a secular society. Those are the two themes that seem to, you know, stand out to me. That God is ruling over everything. And that gives me such a great comfort, because we live in a world where we see nations rising and falling and this and that happening all around the world. Every time that happens, you know what I do? I say, Jesus is in control. And these things shouldn't move us. We should be able to sit back somehow and say, I don't understand all of what's going on, but I know that Jesus is in control. It doesn't faze my heart, doesn't make me worry, doesn't bring fear to my life at all, because I know Jesus is in control. And I hope that that comes out clearly over the next number of weeks. So let's begin with Daniel 1:1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. So remember, back in these days, Israel had split into two kingdoms. They had Judah, who was made up of a couple tribes in the north, and then they had Israel, which had like 10 tribes in the south. So we're talking about that subset, Judah. And there was a king named Jehoiakim who was the king at that time. So during the third year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon. So there's two different kings here, king of Judah, king of Babylon. Babylon, let's say bad guys. King of Judah, also bad guys. That's why Nebuchadnezzar's coming. So Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and he besieged it. It's like they came, built around it, besieging the kingdom. And what's it say next? The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Does that surprise you that's in the Bible? That here is a pagan nation, has nothing whatsoever to do with God, and yet God raised them up, and they came against Jerusalem, who is where God's people were, and he gave them into his hand. God actually raised up a nation to bring judgment against another nation, which was his people. And it has to do because of their constant rebellion against the Lord. So here's a great example of how God is the one who's raising up and setting down. You know, Nebuchadnezzar came, but God gave. That's what you see here. Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem, and God gave them into his hand. Not only did he give the king of Judah into his hand, he also gave some of the vessels of the house of God. So you had the house of God there with all these vessels they used for worship. You know, candlesticks and altars and incense and all these things made out of precious metals. They were used in the worship of God. And God says, you know what? I'm going to give some of those to Babylon as well. Doesn't that seem odd to you? That God would take things dedicated for his worship and say, you know what? I'm going to give them to Babylon. God did this. See, Nebuchadnezzar didn't do this on his own. God did this because he's in control of the nations. And Nebuchadnezzar brought these vessels into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. Why would God allow that? Why would God allow vessels from his house be taken to the house of another god? Because he controls the nations. You might have been sitting there at this time and think, God, have you left us? Have you forgotten us? And God would say, no, I actually brought this about. And that's how I think about the world today when we see all the geopolitical moves. God is not interested in all the things that we think are important. He has a plan and a purpose that has to do with his kingdom and his work upon the earth. And he gives it to one and takes it away from another. That's his prerogative. He put these vessels into the house of his God, and he placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. So that is just one sample from this book of the idea that the Lord rules over every kingdom. Now I want to begin and switch gears and talk about being faithful in this secular environment. The king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch. So this is why some people think that these guys were made eunuchs, because at this point, this chief eunuch is going to do some things. So he says, hey, Ashpenaz, it's a great name for a son if you have one. He says, I want you to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility. So I want to pick a few people, but I'm looking for people of status. I want you to get them, these people of nobility and of the royal family. So Daniel was of this group. And he says in verse 4, I want to see some youths without blemish. How many youths today would like to be without blemish? That's what he was looking for. Give me some youths without blemish, of good appearance. How many of you would like some good appearance? All right, so we might have been in this group. Of good appearance, of course, he said youths with good appearance. He says, I'm also looking for people who are skillful in all wisdom. All right? I'm looking for those who are endowed with knowledge and understanding learning. So these are some sharp kids, aren't they? I mean, they're good looking. I mean, these are the kind of people that we might look at and say, wow, man, I want to be like him. He looks good. He's no blemish. He's smart. He's sharp. He's wise. He's learned. He has understanding. These are the things that we, almost like all of us, pursue. Or if we have a Facebook account, we let everybody know that this is who we really are. And but don't let them see behind the curtain. And then also I want people who would be competent to stand in the king's palace. Oh boy. You know, so he's offering status to them. He's offering access. You can come into my kingdom, you can come into my throne, you can be with me. But I'm looking for a certain kind of people. And if you were lining up to be in that group, man, that would be awesome. Maybe you would put your name in the hat and say, hey, look at me, pick me. I want to be part of that group. So they were chosen because of things they already possessed. These are things, this is who God made them. They had these things because of God. Status, appearance, wisdom, competence. And that's really what a lot of people aspire to today. I think a lot of times when we compare ourselves with others, it's around these kinds of things. And if kids feel isolated or left out, it's probably because some of these things are maybe missing or absent from their life. And so it's a strange thing, but we do use these things to draw comparisons among ourselves. And so, in a sense, it's almost like this is like a fishing line, like it's luring people. Hey, come on, man. If you step into this situation with me, I'm going to give you access into my throne. And I mean, who wouldn't want that? I mean, you're taken as a captive into a strange country. Wouldn't you want to have all the benefits? Wouldn't you want to be able to have access to the king? Wouldn't you want to be like a favorite of the king in that sense? And so it's like something that they would, that it would appeal to them. They would want that. And it's the same for us today. These are things that appeal to the average person, and we would want them. And the thing is, if that's part of our life, we feel like, hey, at some level, I've attained, you know. But Babylon wants more than that. That's not enough for Babylon. I mean, that's the beginning. He starts off with those things, but then what's he do next? Babylon is really after your heart. And so he says, I want you to take these people like this and teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. See, these are young men who grew up learning the Word of God. They grew up memorizing the Scripture, learning how to worship God, learning how to follow Jesus. And now he's saying, hey, you know, I got these guys. I'm going to give them access. They're going to be my favorites here. But I want you to start teaching them a different language. I want you to start teaching them different literature. I want to start getting into their heart and into their mind, into their soul. It's not enough that they look good or they're competent. I want to get inside. And that's what Babylon does. Babylon wants to go way beyond our appearance, way beyond our competence, and get inside of our head. So he says, teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of food that the king ate. Wow, I mean, how many of you would imagine that the king is going to get the best food? And if you're one of this group, you get to eat the same food the king eats. Wouldn't you jump on that bandwagon? You would feel like I'm really, really special. That's what he's offering. He's drawing them in to his realm, his kingdom, his status. But he wants to get at their heart. And you'll find as we go through this book that he constantly pushed these people to worship something other than God. And so he says they will be eating the food the king ate, and they will drink the wine that he drank. And the question you got to ask yourself, would this really appeal to me? Does this appeal to me? Is this what I want? Do I want this kind of status? Do I want this kind of access? Do I want this kind of notoriety in my life? Or is there something else in my heart that I would draw a line in the sand and say, can't go there? So Babylon wants all of you. They were then educated for 3 years. What's that sound like? At the end of the time, they were to stand before the king. So there was 3 years education, learning the language, the way of the Chaldeans, eating the food, you know, trying to get at what's inside of them. And then you can come and stand before the king. So it's almost like a graduation. Man, I went through all the hoops. Here I am now. I get to go in. I get to eat the food. All these things are mine now. And among these were Daniel. And so this is the first time Daniel's even mentioned in the book. But among this group of people was Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. I just wrote on my notes here that he offered them status to blend in and gain favor. Or what if they made a stand? What if they said no to some of these things? They would risk being pushed aside. So it's sort of like, almost like a challenge to what's really in your heart. You know, how far will you go? Will you continue to be drawn into Babylon and receive all the benefits? Or is there a place where you say, you know what? I can't go any further. And that's what happened with these young men. Verse 7. The chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah he called Shadrach. You remember that name, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So Hananiah he called Shadrach. Mishael he called Meshach. And Azariah he called Abednego. Why would God, or not God, why would these guys want to change their name? Well, look what their names mean. Daniel's name means God is my judge. Every time they called his name, Daniel, he hears God is my judge. If you were a little child and your name was God is my judge, wouldn't that do something to you, like inside, like God is your judge? Hey, God is your judge. Come here for a minute. You know, the names had a meaning back then. It wasn't just a popular name. It had to do with a person's character and a formation of who they were. Names were so important in the Bible days. And so Daniel's parents gave him this name, God is my judge. So every time he heard that name, hopefully it would do something to his heart. And they changed his name to Belteshazzar, which means may Bel protect his life. And who's Bel? False God. False God. Now, every time he hears his name, he's saying, may Bel protect you. Instead of God is your judge, may Bel protect you. So even with the changing of their names, they're trying to get into their head, trying to get into their heart, trying to separate them from their covenant with God. Hananiah means Yahweh has been gracious. His name was changed to Shadrach, which means servant of the moon god. Isn't that crazy? But hey, we're going to call you servant of the moon god, and guess what? You get to eat the food of the king, and you get to come into the palace, and you get to learn all the ways of our society. You get to be one of the best. You're a hand-picked, chosen for this place. You who are servant of the moon god. Isn't that crazy? Mishael, his name meant who or what is God. Meshach meant who or what is Aku. That's the moon god. You know, it's just they're pulling them from their commitment to the Lord to something else. Azariah meant Yahweh has helped me. Abednego means servant of Nebo. So the changing of their names wasn't just to give them a Babylonian sounding name. It was to get into their head, get into their heart, to hear this constant reminder, it's not God, it's not Yahweh, it's not him, it's Aku, it's Nebu, it's these gods. You know, come and serve our gods. And when you do, the table is set for you, brother. The best that we have to offer is for you. Just got to leave Jesus behind. Not room for him here. So that's, in a sense, what they were calling. And brothers and sisters, our world calls the same way. Our world calls the same way. Everything's great as long as you don't bring Jesus into the mix. But here's the question. Is that where you want to go? Is that where you want to go? I love verse 8. To me, it is the key scripture in this whole book. And that is, but Daniel resolved. That's it. All this stuff was coming at him, but there was like something in his heart that he said, I can't go there. There's a place that I will not go. And this word resolve, I looked it up, and it has to do with having a settled decision ahead of time. It's like in your heart, you have made a decision. You can say, hey, you can change my surroundings. You can change my name. You can give me this book and educate me this way, but there's a certain place I will not go. And that place happened to be eating the king's food. Why? Well, more than likely, the king's food was maybe food that was not permitted under the Torah. Probably. Or maybe it was food that was offered to Bel or Aku. And he didn't want to eat this food because it was not to God. It was to some other god. And so Daniel said, you know what? I can take all this other stuff. Call me what you want to call me. I'll go to the school for 3 years. I'll read the literature. I'll learn the language. But I'm not going to eat the food. So there's a place in his heart where he just nailed it down and said, no further. Now, guess what? Doing that, he was risking getting kicked out of the king's palace. But that's his choice. Are you willing to risk whatever non-compromise will take? Whatever that risk is in your life, are you willing to say, I'm not going to compromise for Jesus regardless of the risk that might be there for me? And the thing is, if we choose to have this kind of status that these men had, my looks, my appearance, my knowledge, my understanding, my competence, if that's what I'm pursuing in life, my guess is that you'll compromise. Because sometimes those things come with a cost if you want that kind of status, if you want that kind of access, if you want that kind of promotion. They come with a cost, and you've got to decide, resolve in your heart, there's a certain place I won't ever go. And you decide ahead of time. And that's what Daniel did. It's why he got thrown in the lion's den. That's why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got thrown into the fiery furnace. Because they had something that they had resolved in their heart that they would never do. They would worship God. You can take me out of Jerusalem, but you can't take Jerusalem out of me. I'll just put it that way. Their heart was for God. He was their Lord. He was the one they would worship. And whenever these people that were receiving them and giving them the best and welcoming them in and just trying to change their heart, they said, no, you can give me all this stuff, but my heart will never change from my commitment to the Lord. And that's the resolve he wants us all to make. So Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the fine wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked. Now, I like this because sometimes when you get a resolve in your heart, you get an attitude. Who knows what I'm talking about? He didn't have an attitude. He had a resolve in his heart, and he had a submitted heart. He came and he asked. He said to the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. I love that terminology there, because he didn't say, you're making me defile myself. He said, allow me not to defile myself. He took on the responsibility himself. He wasn't pointing a finger. He wasn't saying, you're making me. It wasn't a bad attitude. It wasn't anything like that. He just said, hey, you know what? I resolved in my heart that I will never turn to this because of the Lord. So I'm asking you, don't allow me to defile myself. And here's what happened. God gave Daniel favor. God gave Daniel favor. You know, if God rules nations, how hard is it him to rule the chief of eunuchs? Because Daniel's heart was in the right place before the Lord. And he was making this decision because of his resolve. God gave him favor. And the Lord will do the same for you, brothers and sisters. If you make that stand that might risk you getting cut out of the status that's offered, God's going to take care of you. And he did for Daniel. He said, God gave Daniel favor and compassion. This eunuch had compassion toward Daniel. Isn't that awesome? And that's, it says God did this. It wasn't that Daniel was manipulating the scene at all. God worked something in the heart of this eunuch because Daniel's heart was set so strongly for the Lord. And the Lord said, you know what? I'm gonna move on this man's heart in favor of my son, Daniel. So he gave favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And I have a scripture in Proverbs 16. It says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies be at peace with him. Isn't that awesome? That's exactly what was happening here. This man's ways were pleasing the Lord, and he made his enemies to be at peace with him. So the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, hey, you know what? I'm afraid. If I do this, look, I fear my lord the king who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? And so you would endanger my head with the king. So he's appealing to Daniel. He's saying, hey, if you guys don't eat this food, which the king has picked out for you, and then you turn out to look weak or, you know, sullen or whatever, he's going to take my head off. And so can you help me out in this situation? I'm making a bargain here. So Daniel, and here God is giving him wisdom. Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, he said, test your servants just for 10 days. Isn't that wise? He's helping him see a way out. Here's a way that you can do what I'm asking you. So he's appealing to him, but he's also offering a solution. Again, he's not up there with an attitude. He's saying, hey, what about this? He says, what if we go for 10 days? Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then let our appearance and the appearance of the other youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and then deal with your servants according to what you see. Isn't that a great compromise? That was God helping him with wisdom to work through the situation because he wanted to do what was right before the Lord. And so he listened to them in this matter, and he tested them for 10 days. That's awesome to me. At the end of the 10 days, it was seen that they were better. There you go, vegetarians. They were better in appearance and fatter. Amen? Looks like it's a good thing in the Bible. They were better in appearance. They were fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So he walks over, he goes, yeah, guy's looking pretty good here, you know. I think your plan's working. And so keep your heart with the Lord. Keep your heart before the Lord. They ate the king's food, so the steward took away their food and the wine they were supposed to drink, and he gave them vegetables. So when you trust God, when you make your stand, when you have that resolve in your heart that I will not go any further, somehow God works this in your favor because you're doing it before him. You're doing it because of him. Just don't cop an attitude. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. So remember, they were for 3 years learning the way of the Babylonians, learning the Chaldean language. And it seems like that somehow God maybe supercharged that. I'm not sure what the word I would use there, but God's helping them. So the point is, there's nothing wrong with having wisdom, understanding, or learning. All these things are part of living in this world today. What's wrong is when all these things begin to take the Lord out of our heart. And so God gave them learning and skill in all the literature and wisdom. And beyond that, he gave Daniel understanding in visions and dreams. So there was education, let's call it education, beyond what was available to them because God was teaching them something. God was giving Daniel this ability to understand dreams. And you'll see how important that is in some of the weeks to come. But Daniel and these brothers were there being faithful to the Lord being diligent, learning the stuff he was supposed to be learning, all the stuff, the changing of the names, that's okay. I can take that. I can learn the language. I can do all this stuff, no big deal. It's part of living here in Babylon, but my worship will always be to God. And that's where he drew the line in the sand. That's where God honored him. And God, along with the learning, gave him additional understanding of visions and dreams. At the end of the time, the 3 years, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. So, I just have in my notes here, God gave Judah to Babylon. God gave Daniel favor to the leader of the eunuchs. And God gave these four learning, skill, and understanding. I just want you to see that in all these things, God was the one working at a national level, but at a personal level, at an individual level. God is at work, working even in the hearts of our enemies. God is at work. Do you trust him for that? God is in control of this world. And then I titled this message 10X. Who knows what 10X means? It's like, huh? Like 10 times. Yeah, 10 times. And it comes from this verse. The king spoke with them, and among all of them, doesn't tell us how many there were, but among all of them, there was none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom. How many matters? Every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better. Not 1 time better, not 4 times better, 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all of his kingdom. How's that? How's that for being faithful to Jesus? How's that for living in Babylon, being encroached upon by this culture and pushed upon with the education and the learning and the language and all these things that are pushing toward you to somehow take your heart away? You say, no, my heart is going to be here, faithful to Jesus. And God says, you know what? I'm going to bless you and make you 10 times better. Would you rather be 0 times better or 10 times better? It comes by making this resolve. That was the one distinguishing thing in the life of Daniel and these other brothers. All of them were without blemish. All of them were good appearance. All of them had understanding. All of them had wisdom. All of them were learned. All of them had competence to stand in front of the king. All of them were trained for 3 years. All of them learned the language. But out of all that group, there was these four who were outstanding, and it was because, only because, they remained faithful to God. So I'm going to close with right now, if you want to have Randy come up, maybe the musicians come up. We're going to close with a song here, but I want to just summarize. Daniel had a red line. Oh, then it goes on to say, I didn't finish the scripture, all the musicians, and then Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. You know what? When King Cyrus came, you know what that was? The fall of Babylon. King Cyrus came. So Babylon, they ruled for a time, but God set them down. He raised them up for a time, and then he brought the Medes and Persians against them, and they were lost. So God is the one who rules over nations. Do you have a red line in the sand? Have you put something in your heart? Have you resolved something in your heart? I hope you have. You can stand with me if you want. Here's a statistic, and I'm saying this because we're talking about, these are young men here. This is a guy who's maybe anywhere from the age 15 to 20 making this kind of a stand for the Lord. I think it's awesome. About 2/3, so 2 out of every 3 church involved teens drop out in young adulthood. Why is that? They didn't resolve. They didn't resolve something in their heart. They let the culture that we all live in, we all live here, we all learn the language, we all get the education, we all are offered the status, but somehow, two out of three let it take their heart. And it happens to adults too. I'm just happened to read this statistic for youth because Daniel was a youth. Two out of three drop out in young adulthood. They found something better, something more, something that offered them something that they think is better than Jesus. And it's sad. It's sad. It's something we should be praying for. And you who have children should pour into them the importance of their faithfulness to God in this culture that we live in. It says almost half of those, so you think of two out of three, half of those, so one out of three, they go to college, and the move to the campus is part of the reason. You may know people who that's happened to. They've serving God, they go off, they get an education, they get the pressure, the culture, everything is there. Again, nothing wrong with that. But if it's getting your heart, that's serious. And so, you know, a third of these are letting something get their heart. 70% say their changing beliefs were shaped by the surrounding culture. And it pushed them away from the church. So where's your red line? Here's a question you can ask yourself. Where am I being pressured to compromise? No. Where is it? I'm sure that it's always there. Babylon doesn't stop. It's going to throw you in the fiery furnace. It's going to throw you in the lion's den. It's always there. Always there. Press, 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 press. Change your name. We don't want you to hear God as your judge. We want you to hear, follow the moon god. God will let you succeed in this world. I'm not talking about succeeding in this world. These guys succeeded in their world 10 times better, but it didn't get their heart. That's what we want. We want to see people do well in Babylon, learn the way, grow, be faithful. Just don't let it get your heart. Let God give you favor. God will give you favor if you're faithful to Him. And keep the covenant integrity intact. That's what 10X is.